a lot of it's with regard to trade is governed internationally and governed by the federal government. And while we want free trade, we really want fair trade. So what we're interested in is ensuring that any tariffs that exist, any obstacles that exist, are equal, that flow both ways, and are not one-sided. This trip, however, even though it had a trade component, had more emphasis on investment and jobs. So what we were really spent the greatest amount of our time on and the greatest amount of our meetings were concerned, the actual investment of Chinese companies in Arkansas, creating jobs for Arkansans, you know, like we did in Europe. We've had five or six, seven or eight companies that are based in Europe, either in France or Germany or Denmark or England, that actually put in manufacturing companies in Arkansas and built plants in Arkansas and have hired thousands of Arkansas workers. The emphasis on the Chinese trip was to do the same thing with Chinese companies coming to Arkansas, building facilities here, and employing Arkansans here. So while the trade component was a part of it, the biggest part of it was actual investment and job creation in, for our state from the Chinese, much like we've done with the European companies.
You also met, too, with some trade officials in China, and you haven't elaborated much on this, about some issues that might affect Tyson Foods, maybe even Walmart. Doesn't take a great leap of logic to think that that might be somewhat poultry related, since China has had some issues with poultry and bringing U.S. products in. Can you comment more on the nature of that discussion? Has it advanced any since your conversations?
I can't comment more specifically, and we have not gotten any feedback in the last 2 weeks that something concrete has occurred. What I can tell you is that I had meetings with both ministers, which is comparable to our cabinet people here in the United States, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Interior, those kind of folks, as well as the Vice Premier, which is comparable to our Vice President. The meeting with the Vice Premier was extraordinarily, I think, fruitful. I certainly came away from it with very positive feelings. I'm cautiously optimistic, but nothing's happened in the last 2 weeks for me to be able to tell you that the problem's totally resolved.
All right, but you'll let us know when it is.
As soon as they let me know, I'll be happy to tell the world.
I know you had mentioned, too, and Grant Tenniel, your AEDC director, had mentioned that Walmart is a conversation starter for you guys in economic development talks, particularly overseas. It was in China. Obviously, Walmart has received a black eye in the last week and a half with the scandal involving potential bribery in Mexico. Does that impair that use of them as an asset in starting economic development conversations? And do you have any thoughts related to what has transpired so far in that Walmart story?
Well, I don't think it'll be a hindrance if Walmart acts quickly to fully disclose what their investigation reveals and fully cooperates with official agency investigations, such as federal government investigations. I think as long as Walmart cooperates with the investigations that are ongoing, as long as they complete their own internal investigation, which I understand they're conducting, and as long as they're disclosed fully the results of that, I think they can weather that storm. Because, you know, if something wrong happened, then the worst thing you can do is cover it up. What you need to do is get it out front, find out what happened, take appropriate steps or appropriate action with regard to individuals that were responsible, and then ensure that you've got procedures in place to prevent it from happening again. That's frankly all any company or anybody else can do when they find wrongdoing. And so the investigations are ongoing by both the feds and by Walmart internally. And I suspect that the way they handle it will dictate whether or not it'll be an impediment going forward.
Let's shift total gears here and let's talk about Medicaid. Mm-hmm. We got a report yesterday from a subcommittee hearing that it looks like a lot of things involving the Medicaid reform efforts that you've been pushing for, there will be some things that will be on track to go to mm-hmm. green light on right. July 1st. Even if you got maximum optimum benefits out of that, all it's going to do is slow the growth rate of Medicaid. It's not going to reduce the amount of money that Medicaid needs. So you've either got to do more in terms of reducing services or raise taxes. Can you speak to that issue of where you might be thinking of going at this point in time?
Well, there's a third alternative here.
Okay.
The third alternative is that you get some degree of natural growth, and a portion of that natural growth can be devoted to Medicaid. So I'm not sure what the route will be. Obviously, it's the kind of thing that you can't do in a vacuum. You have to do with the legislature. You have to do it in consultation with legislative leaders and then ultimately the entire legislative body, whether it's in cutting some services, whether it's in raising some taxes or revenue devoted specifically to that, or whether it's devoting existing revenue in a greater percentage, particularly some of the growth in revenue, hopefully if it continues, to Medicaid, or combinations of all three of those things. None of that will be done without involvement with the legislature. Almost all of that would require legislative action anyway. Mm-hmm. And so while I can propose and will, while I accept the responsibility for providing the alternatives and the options and my thoughts, ultimately it'll be a joint exercise between the administration and the legislature as to how we handle that problem. But you make a very good point, Roby, and it's one that continues that needs to be continually made, and that is all that we're trying to do in payment reform, all that we're trying to do in some of the efficiencies and other things that we've been concentrating on, some of which, as you mentioned, will be ready to roll out mm-hmm. by July 1st. All of that's designed to slow the growth. It's not a panacea. It's not a magic wand that's automatically going to remove all the need for Medicaid funding. And it's particularly, I think, and none of this even counts whether or not the federal government does what they're going to do with regard to the federal health care reform, mm-hmm. Which I've always said was another burden on us if it actually goes through the way it was preliminarily planned. It's not going to happen immediately, but down the line it would cause additional burden on Medicaid. And so I think the people just have to know all the truth and be realistic about the fact that if we can improve what we're doing so that we slow that growth, that's not just removing the entire problem of still having huge Medicaid needs that we don't currently have the revenue to be able to fully fund.
Reduced services still on the table, yes or no?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's always an option.
Raising taxes still on the table.
Nobody has come with anything specific about that. Theoretically, it's always an option, but it's not anything that I have planned or that I've heard from the legislature. It is a potential third spoke. If you're really asking me what's likely to happen, I think you're looking at two things. One, some degree of cutbacks in some services, some dedication of some natural growth in our revenue figures toward Medicaid so that they end up getting more of the existing pie. A lot of that, though, will be dictated by, first of all, what happens in the economy and what happens with our revenue, and secondly, what the needs for adequacy are, which comes first mm-hmm. in K-12.
Do you have any early ideas of what those service cuts could entail?
No, but we would go about that the same way we try to do any major public policy change. We involve the people on the front line. We don't do any of this stuff in a vacuum. You remember what we did with prison reform? You know, we've done it with education reform. We get the actual people, the providers, the recipients, the beneficiaries, doctors, hospitals, home health folks, pharmacists, dentists, all the people that are on the front line of the Medicaid programs, as well as the beneficiaries, as well as the recipients, so that we get them all at a table and we talk about all this stuff. And you got to make hard choices. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there are hard choices in this job, and you don't shy away from that when you run for it. You accept the responsibility. Sometimes you got to make tough, difficult, hard choices. But we don't make them in an ivory tower vacuum without involving the very people that have to implement those policy changes. So I think it's important and essential anytime we do any of this stuff that we include the people on the front line and hash it out with them and take their input. We don't always agree, and nobody always gets their way, but at least you're making decisions that are informed and more pragmatic, more practical.